This is the Mysterious Matters of Max Metters podcast, number 10. Mysterious Matters of Max Metters is a novel I wrote in 1991. This podcast is a type of audiobook in which I read the novel to you in hopes that you will like it and pick up a copy. If this is the first time you're listening to this podcast, please go back and start with episode 1, which explains some of the ideas and circumstances that led me to write this novel. Mysterious Matters of Max Metters by Peter Gelman. I will now read chapter 9. Fiasco of a phone convo came upon us next. And mighty feelings, and deep, empty breaths. Do you want to come over tonight? Nope, she said. Sorry, I'm too busy. Her short phrases were like short slices of a knife in my gut. They meant hardliners have Gorby in their pocket. Call me later, I said, but not gently enough. So she replied, if I can. When we hung up, I was thinking, if I can, a Mary can. If I can, a Mary can. And I was surprised how bad I felt. I didn't call her the next day. And she didn't call me, nor the next day, nor the next. Then I took a bus to her house and yelled up to her lighted window because the buzzer was broken. Is there something wrong? No, she said, and seemed not so much surprised by my concern as annoyed. I noticed when I tried to hug you just now, you were a little standoffish.
I was?
Yeah, like that pilgrim.
What pilgrim?
You know, that guy with the blunderbuss. Miles Standoffish.
That's you, child.
She scowled at this, as if I was stupid, and said only,
was I?
When I insisted the question. I took a deep, empty breath and felt a gnawing jack-o'-lantern skull and robot in my stomach. Then I asked in what was maybe not the smartest, but the bravest thing I faced the jack-o'-lantern with Mary's face, that robot skull with freckles, and I demanded, but gently, like a little boy, you still love me.
That a question or an answer, she replied,
obviously stalling and resentful, but she looked surprised.
Question?
Yes, she said softly, but her face was blank, with just some lines of surprise in her eyes. I said, oh, 'cause I thought a silence would just kill me there. And I asked, you seem a little preoccupied, am I right?
I guess I am.
Was this then the secret?
I felt faint and frightened
and took her hand. Want to talk about it, honey pie? Not really, she said with that blank robot skull face masking Mary's. There's nothing to talk about. My face fell. I knew I was crestfallen, but surprised in my turn when she went on to ask, do you love me? Oh, I said, surprised.
Yes.
Listen, would you like to move in with me?
I couldn't help saying it. I hadn't planned it, but I had thought about it.
Oh,
she said, her face showing some sign of feeling. But what was she feeling? I don't know, Max. Let me think about it. It was blittering blabble-flab, but I could not help buzzing hopefully around her like a fly on the glass behind a neon flickery beer sign Rimmy on the outside, fly-speckled Ymir on the inside. I felt like Mary was a simple word, but I just didn't know how to read her, and she didn't want to spell me. She didn't say anything for a week, although we jumped for carnal joy on my creaky couch on a Wednesday 9 o'clock. But she didn't stay over. She drove back by midnight because she was a pumpkin, I told her. But don't worry, you are my pumpkin. My legume. She said she didn't want to move in with me on our way to a Charlie Chaplin movie on a Friday because we weren't ready yet. Which was wise, I thought, but still I didn't like it. And she had a good reason. She couldn't sleep over, and I couldn't sleep over. Her old friend from high school was in town. And Saturday, I was sad young man in the city. What a Goethe role to play. I was a good John Wilkes Booth actor, too, in that role. Wanted to get drunk and be mean and heartless. Wrathed with wreck, I let the reptile in me mumble incoherently. I paced with a hunch, which was a chip on my shoulder. I boxed my shadow and called it sweet boy and hit his plaster cast face. I picked the scab and felt bad to see the piggy pink underneath. Called up Lafcadio the tiger, and he said, coincidence, fortuitous coincidence, my friend. Tim, Mike, and I, and some others, including strangers and strange women, are meeting for happy hour downtown with an eventual I spy on midnight cappuccino at this rude Ethiopian cafe at Seven Corners on the West Bank. Although I go as an outsider and a chess player because I believe in the system and the ultimate truth of free enterprise, although I am not against state regulation of utilities. Utilities like free speech, eh? See you there. But I'm not wearing art school black. I'm wearing faded, filthy baby blue. Said I, and such. He said, long time no see, buddy. You'll have to work hard to keep your utilities in your pants, Mr. Metters. Mary, Mary, quite contrary, is not giving you the good night tonight, obviously. Hey, shut up, laugh cat. Your utilities are futilities. And you think your pants are Disneyland, and your hands the ride. Oh, tell me about it. Don't I know it. Don't got me no Mary, man. Discussions, discussions, downtown discussions. Ling Ling has a plaything. He's a balding boomer. Notice the ads on TV now feature that balding guy all the time? Does that mean the boomers are middle-aged almost? Boomers, right, sarcastically. Every generation thinks they're so special, they get a name. It's the frickin' media. I say, everyone is an individual. No, it's like that song says, we got no war to name us. But the one that expresses how I feel is that old one from their first album that goes, red light, run it! Lafcadio scoffed. Max, are you angry? You have something against traffic lights? Go marry your mama. Anger is futile. No, no, think about it. If anger is futile, you must think love is too, I said. You love, then you must hate too? I'm pro and con things, but hate? Well, I'm angry sometimes, but it doesn't do me any good. Quite often I hate the president, sometimes the Ruskies, sometimes yuppies. But it doesn't do me any good, I admit. One time I hated the French, I admitted. Pourquoi? 'Cause their spies blew up the Rainbow Warrior and killed a photo guy, and the French citizens don't give a flying fuck. They're too cosmopolitan. So you're gonna boycott Les Mis when it comes? Huh? That's not French, that's Victor Hugo. And Yanks invented the musical, even if frogs invented the barricade. You seen Justine? She dyed her hair white. Yeah, I seen a bunch of white-haired punks around town recently. That's the new punk style. Not dyed black, but old lady white. Not old, more like a ghost. Heard that guy who got his legs cut off sitting in front of an armaments train is touring Nicaragua. Lafcadio smiled. What a dope. He couldn't get up? He says the train sped up. Lafcadio grinned. What a dope. He raised his hand to order another soda. He was a teetotaler, but not an alcoholic, reflecting ancient foster child fears. I felt strange. So angry, I couldn't even think. I wanted to hurt him. You're the dope for thinking so, I told him with quiet malice. Lafcadio, I challenged. Lafcadio leaned his head and took a step back and said coolly, let's remain unnameable, mysterious, ineluctable. Yeah, you want to be old. You want to get this damn life over with, I accused crossly. Your IRAs are a ruse. I hopped ahead and turned around and said, when I'm old, they can pull me up like a coelacanth and say, hey man, I thought all you punk rockers was extig stuffed and mounted in the Smithsonian parking lot right next to the moon rockets and the computer punch cards. And though I'd be an old geezer, I'd show my sharp yellow teeth, chomp, chomp. How's Mary? Yvonne asked. Tim looked sneakily significant. Lafcadio did not turn. He squinted his Genghis Khan eyes straight ahead, leading us. She's fine, I shuddered and ran to Tim, who was eyeing the midnight raptors of the gender that yanged his yin. New buildings going up. Remember the stupid old joke? What joke? Joke where you ask, what's this? Holding up the middle finger. What? The Minneapolis skyline. The IDS, get it? Yeah, for years the IDS was all. But now, can't even see the cool little Fauché Tower anymore. All I see is stainless steel cube BFD. One time, when they were building the IDS, a cable got loose and was swinging across the street and smashing both sides. That was so cool. It was weird, man. Just smashing the lawyers' offices. Boo-hoo! I remember when you could see the Fauché from the river. You're talking like an old-timer. When I was a young man. I feel old, and I'm only 25. Time is bopping faster and faster. That's why our generation has no name. I don't know. I mean, like in documentaries, they talk about Kennedy's kids and how they all wanted to change the world. Can you imagine? Yeah, it's like we were born cynical old farts. What a joke. I don't even want to change the world. I mean, if I was God, sure I would. I'd zap those fuckers in South Africa, free Poland, and put a tail on Lee Iacocca. But I'm not a god. How can you believe in government when it's been run by scoundrels before and after Carter? Carter? Remember Carter? I was in sixth grade, and I remember our class gave him a D on his report card. Yeah, but he was a Hamlet. He wasn't a liar. No. Stagflation and hostages are bummers, but not evil deeds like, oh, fuck me, I don't want to even think about it. I'll blow a gasket. We'll see. If they draft me, I won't go to Nicaragua. As there were rumors of an invasion plan in the newspaper from time to time. And KFAI News on the amateur muckraker wavelength told of rumors of Pentagon pretenses being set up. Another beer! So, how are things between you and Miss America? Tim asked next. Great, I spread my arms. She's goddamn great. I couldn't help standing up and putting on my coat. When we paid the bill, I waited for Lafcadio to say something. I felt sure Arthur had told him Mary's secrets. He had a power over me, but he wouldn't tell me, because once he told me, he would lose that power. Lafcadio said nothing. He never mentioned Mary, and it made me more nervous. At the next bar, I downed whole glasses at a time and became drunk on vodka.
I'm drunk on vodka, like Boris, mayor of Moscow.
Huh? What is it you say? Heard that the KGB threw that liberal mayor Yeltsin off a bridge into the river. They say, no, they didn't. He was just drunk. Anyone heard from McGregor yet? Where is he now? I'm leaving Minneapolis. The baseball is good, I grant you. But the women are all filled up with angst. What do you mean? Minneapolis is... See that one over there? Minneapolis is a city where women go around wearing hats. Yeah, well, you don't like hats? Don't get me wrong, Yvonne, the men have angst too, but I don't care about them. Lafcadio, tell me your secrets, I said, leaning on him drunkenly. He looked at me keenly, drinking his 7-Up, and repeated, I choose to remain unnameable, mysterious, ineluctable, unknowable. Of me, you cannot conceive, man-child in the promised land. You are preoccupied, aren't you? You act like Manfred on his mountain. Stalwart in pride, yes, but pride only, without beliefs. I have no beliefs, I said, wondering. And you? What are your stalwart beliefs? Lafcadio fixed on me the stripe of his eye and covered his heart with his hand. I still believe. Despite all, I still believe in progress. I do believe in the legislation of morality. Yes, down to dress codes. And the ultimate victory of the right. And that I cannot believe, I said. I know, he said. You were born good, and the price of that unbridled goodness is you were born bitter. Maybe I was good, I said. But can we say I am good
when I bathed my butt in a bitter bird bath? Maybe I was born bitter and became good to compensate. Only, I'm not strong enough to keep it up. Why would I be good? Good is only good for its own sake. Is that enough? Now ask, why would I be bitter? What have I to be bitter about? Not a thing. Lafcadio shook his head, not bitter by privation, but by emptiness of success. He was about to go on, but I angrily interrupted. I'm successful. I'm not successful. And when was I ever? I didn't ever try or even want to be. You are successful. You have money, comforts, responsibilities, securities. Do you feel happy? You don't feel empty? Happy? Pretty much. Pretty much happy. Sometimes, in the night, I admit, empty, he said. But not because of my success on the social ladder. No, I feel empty when I realize that I have become the thing I hate. But no, I don't want to talk about that. You judge me. Don't judge me until you know me. You can't help judging me because you are born good, suburban, comfortably nuclear, genetically angelic. While I was born bad, unwanted, orphan, foster child, a half-breed whose parents conceived me in the thrill of taboo, across the segregated neighborhoods, branding me bad with a strange, indefinable, octoroony high yellow skin color. Don't you judge me, good Moses Metters. Don't judge me until you dare know me. But you don't dare know me. I won't tell someone who judges me why and how I became the thing I hate. It's too painful. And I fear that you will hate me. Almost as much as I hate myself, if I dare tell you. But it's you that I'm interested in. You abjure success when it is there for you. You have no good reason to abjure success. Only subjective wisps of feelings. It's because you are young. You will wear down. I will do everything in my power to keep you from wearing down, but you will, in the end, succumb to your fate and become, like me, the thing you hate. Only then will you, Moses Metters, understand me. Then will you make amends for your unkind judgments of me in your hasty youth tonight. I am your friend. But even as he said it, his intense face glowed blood blue with benevolent evil, and I could tell that he read my mistrust in my own face. You say you are my friend, I said, and stopped. Eagerly, he stared back, hungering. Where's Mary? I asked him. He looked at me with a wicked shred of wisdom shining like a crescent moon in his evil eyes, but he didn't answer. I felt the answer. If you knew me, you would trust me, not Mary. Yvonne, the foot tickler, bounded between us, laughing. He took a step back while she talked of Tim's foolish courtship of the waitress. Chin up, she told me, lifting my chin with her long, sexy fingers. She pulled me out of the bar ahead of the rest. Hold your horses, Daddy first, Yvonne laughed as Lafcadio called out, running after us. Tim and the rest followed. The cold night air made the lights of the city shine bright and clear. I stopped, feeling an intuition that something was going to happen. What are you running for? I asked Lafcadio, understanding that I was very close to discovering something. I didn't want the answer. I wanted the question. So maybe the cipher I was feeling was not a cipher. It was a palimpsest. Mirror backwards and faint. And what I had to do was turn over the page to read it plain. I looked left, I looked right. As Lafcadio ran back to me and paused, he said, "Where are we going now? That one's not really..." What was he going to say? "Wait," I said. "I just want to check it out." He nodded and went ahead, inside. But as I was opening it, he pushed out. "What's going on?" "Nothing. It's no good there. Let's cross the street." "What are you talking about?" Tim demanded. "The bars are filled with yuppies over there." Lafcadio smiled at the second-story windows, not meeting my eyes, while the others walked back and forth in confusion. "I trust Lafcadio's judgment. Let's cross," Yvonne said lightheartedly, but with strange hesitations, too, gripping my arm too hard, in retrospect cluing me, really saying the opposite of what she said, and enjoying her share of the secret, suppressing laughter. Even so, she was charitably telling me that a certain information waited near at hand. "Huh," said Tim with great sudden comprehension, stopping. And he laughed strangely. "Aha! Okay." He grabbed my other arm. The steam of their breath made a dull cloud in front of me. I slipped out roughly. Yvonne cried out with indignation. "What the hell is going on?" I yelled. "Shut up and play along," Tim whispered, grabbing my arm again. "It's for your own good." "To hell with you," throwing him off roughly and advancing on him. "You get out of here. I'm going in alone." I started walking toward the door. Don't. He smiled weakly. He tried to grab me, but I jumped backwards, bumping into Lafcadio, who had been following close behind me. I grabbed Lafcadio and pushed him hard. He stepped back lightly, but slipped on the ice, and with a look of concern and surprise, fell back crookedly on the curb and cried out in a strange tone, "Tell me!" 'Twas a lone cry in the night, stands out like a cardboard cutout. Self-mockery of one who refused to be told by anyone, but the one who could not tell it. Even then I was proud that I had given her every opportunity to tell me, until her secret found me. And, ignorant in hunger, I had to bite the apple, bitter and green. But still, this was one of those rare examples of my goodness for its own sake, for the sin of pride of my goodness sustained me through my fall from innocence, and I could continue to find self-pride in loving her long after. Yvonne helped Lafcadio stand up again. He stood quietly. "I'll tell you, Max," he said. "Mary is in there." "So?" "She's not alone." "So?" I shouted. "She's not alone," he repeated. "She's not," I said. Walked up to the broad window. I put my face to the glass, but it was too opaque with strange crystals. "I'm sorry," said Tim. "Sorry about what?"
I turned on him angrily. Tim started to open his mouth when I realized I couldn't let him give form to the answer of the secret, that once he said it, it would be true. It was a terrible delusion, but the poison of it made me mad and desperate and humiliated with helplessness. I lunged at him and swung wildly. He blocked the punch with his arm and at the same moment hit me above my ear. I felt myself sitting in the snow. Dimly, I heard him saying, "What a friend of yours has to go through." "You are not my friend," I heard myself say. "Go away." There were people all around, standing, looking down at me. I was starting to feel myself again, and with it was a pain on the side of my head. "We are going away," Yvonne dragged at Tim. Someone in the crowd said something about stupid men. Something about the police. "He's all right." Lafcadio spread his arms against the people around me. "I'm fine," I said, rolling and pushing myself up to my knees and standing. Lafcadio started to help me up, but checked himself and stood a respectful distance. We exchanged glances. I could not tell what he was thinking. I was confused as I pushed the ornate wood and glass door. Inside, I looked around and didn't see Mary. I held my head, which was hurting, and felt very low and mean. Sitting at the bar, looking at the dried blood on my hand, I ordered coffee. I was looking at the ground. When I smelled gliding over the coffee, a familiar scent. I looked up and saw two strange women, as Lafcadio prophesied. One of them standing on one leg, which I associated with Mary's story of when she was little and went to the zoo and saw the flamingos standing the way they do. She thought they only had one leg, and that made her cry. But realized that the woman standing on one flamingo leg was indeed Mary. Indeed her, only it was a side of Mary I didn't know. The sassy, frash side, all hiney hide, high up, swaying in the air, don't care. Gracefully tart, part intellectual groove, part bad girl, but quiet too. And leaning back with elbows on the bar beside her, a too thin, and leaning back, silent movie tragedian. But when she straightened up and talked, she was more modern in her pose, clearly rich in manner, with thought and experience, but with eyes cloying and annoying. She laughed petty and soprano. Then I understood that the punk white-haired woman beside Mary must be her roommate, Anna DeVoto. This Anna was not like I had pictured her, nor was, in fact, Mary. Mary was not small and light like a bird. She was small and massive like a stone. And her feet and her hands, in fact, were too large, like a Michelangelo's. Although she was dressed in a short skirt and tight vest with necklaces, oceans and beaches of the seashore, she leavened her dreamy bread with eyes like fists. Together, they made quite a museum sketch of two good-looking girls of the punk can-can of the 1980s. But this was no Moulin Rouge,
on the museum wall. This was the Midwest. Now, my life in the city. Only these were not old Midwest girls. They were the red windmill types of the secret heartland, the hidden past, the blind future, too. I understood that while I was not expecting promises from Mary, I certainly did not expect this. But what was this? She didn't see me. This was consequential? No. It was not. But I did not go to her. And why not? Because, I realized, some great consequence was bugging me. I thought of several easy explanations. They were all wrong. And lost in the beseech of easy and wrong, I looked away to clean my mind and hear my intuition. And I had to smile at myself. Oh, this was the big secret. I looked around and saw that it was very funny that I had asked her to move in with me when she was already living with that Anna. I looked around for Lafcadio with a self-mocking feeling, but he wasn't around. I felt very good and comical. It was funny how it was such a good joke against me. It was such a good joke that I felt I could take the joke. It was such a good joke, and everyone was in except for me. It was funny how I got so mad and savage because I didn't know what everyone else knew. Columbus thought he discovered the Spice Lands, but he found America. And the natives were there first, I told myself, remembering what Arthur said, watching Mary and the other one in the bar mirror. What a dope. Drank midnight coffee till stomach burned, watching them. Cut off my legs. I must have mumbled it, for beside me, the warm and satiric woman in a black plaid dress and a green hat heard me and looked at me with eyes half humorous, half concerned. Then the humor dropped away and I looked away, but she tapped my shoulder and said, "I'm sorry, but your ear is bleeding." It was absurd, but my intuition told me that she and I could love each other famously. Eros, agape, philia, and oh, caritas, you name it, pal. And I just knew it was true. But her kind words brought attention from the people around me, and as all the heads turned, I felt Mary's turn too. So, laughing bitterly at my intuition, like evolution, already finding me a new mate, I ducked off the stool and pushed through the crowd and ran out the door. As I was walking out, I remembered something bad I did in childhood and felt very bad. I kicked a neighborhood friend. Why did I do that bad thing? The buckle on my sandal caught his shin and it began to bleed, and the trickle of blood was very red. I felt very bad about that, and I wished I could have stopped that impulse to kick him. Now I remembered that I felt bad about it then too, but could not resist the need to kick him when he said a word that I did not understand, and I was mad because I did not understand. Walking across the bridge from downtown, I felt very bad about that, and I pressed on the bruise on my ear to punish myself for it. I could not help thinking about that other side of Mary, which made me understand, now, too late, why she acted so inconsistently with me. Only it would have been better if nothing had ever happened between us. Thinking that, I began to wonder if that was true. A landing hoary roar of frozen 747 with heavy lights, black-skirted, mothy flight over night. I was walking on the broken rhythm of the railroad ties on the shortcut home through the dark and danger, engorged with bleak, bad, and anger. I could feel the acid in the rain that was coming. I felt the heavy clouds over me, horsing, wild-eyed, laughing with horror. These friends of mine were friends. Felt the pentagon in music. Felt the music of madness so close. Slogans of insanity, ringing and rhyming with the slippery slope of socialism. In an old iron, I smelled an icy cider of sickness. And throwing it down with a clank, I heard the ironwork smelter of sadness. I could almost feel the old photo of these artifacts. I was blinded with brown, overexposed with badness. I felt my bone marrow charred Juden with an iron cross hanging albatross. The moon a sun, the moon's sun a skull. The streets slippery, melting down to the Mississippi under the black skull sun. I hated the single street light, hot on my face, my eyes dusty. I heaved a long sob and sat there. Suddenly I worried that I was feasting on misery, getting high on bitter bile. If my pleasure principle was negative, like a film negative, was I master of my own doom, free to find happiness in dire and doom? Could it be so awful and true? After a good lonely while, the city gave a clank and a ding, ding, ding. I drew quick the dare of dirty daring do, looking up at the locomotive of solitude, thinking, red light, run it! Go ahead, stand and deliver, to burst my brains in a slow draw down, showdown with the shadow. Felt the muteness of the Leviathan, this Leviathan mouth mute with the silence of self-murder, this neurasthenia of night nature, this industrial shadow of bedbug's bite, this heavy frame, this bullseyed, this diesel freight train, this sightly cycloptical freight of malignity might. Ka! Tak! Ak! Ak! Cam! Tam! Takum! 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 Thank you for listening. Mysterious Matters of Max Metters by Peter Gelman is available as a traditional paper book from popular online booksellers. It is also available as an ebook for Kindle and Nook and other formats. The Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License protects this work. Thank you.